Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's 12-12-17.
You like them? Well, it's a semi-palindrome.
Well,
maybe 21.
In 2012, it was 12-12-12, but we missed it.
But the palindrome has to be, doesn't it have to be backwards?
Yeah, it has to be forward and backwards. It's not a palindrome. It's just kind of cute.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of get up and into what's going on with markets. Let me click this here. All right. Well, first of all, may I say to you a very happy Hanukkah to you.
I thought we already did Hanukkah like a few weeks ago.
No, it started tonight.
Oh,
I didn't like the candles. I feel bad. I'm a bad Jew.
Can't you light the candles after the show?
Yeah, I can do so. It's supposed to be done at sunset. And
well, it's sunset someplace.
Yeah, that's true. I guess. Well, anyway, here's what's going on with the markets. Everybody is in the pool. Kind of when you were a kid, I don't know about if you had the. I had a pool in my backyard and everybody in the pool, everybody would just go flying in the pool and didn't even think about what they were doing. It was just kind of the call to get in the water. That's kind of what's happening with asset prices. Everything is driving higher across the board, new highs for U.S. indices, money flowing into markets around the world, even with the idea that there's going to be potentially a rate hike and reduced liquidity due to slowing QE. Investors aren't stopping from throwing money into anything they can. If it's down, they're going to buy it. And if it's up, they're going to sell a little bit and buy something that's down.
So beginning of the end.
Now we have news that a tentative tax bill was going to be released today. I can't stand when government has something that they're dealing with that's big, and all these guys just feel like they have to get out there. The senators and the Congress people, person, men, women, they have to get out there and get their TV time. You know, we're gonna release a draft bill today, which they didn't. They said that this morning. That had the markets kind of moving higher. There's a lot still up in the air. Now we're hearing about a 21% rate for corporations, dropping the top rate for individuals from 39.7 to 37. Talking about the mortgage interest deduction on $750,000 mortgages, because that's common, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know what the people over the top are going to be paying more. And there were some other things about the potential for, what was the other thing that was that that? There was one other. Oh, and pass-through corporations will be taxed, I guess a 20% deduction. They were hoping for a 24%. I'm not exactly sure how that whole pass-through thing works yet, but we'll see what happens. You know, for subchapter S's.
Well, this assumes this thing actually gets passed.
I think they're going to pass it.
Well, it depends. I think it's all depending on the Alabama election.
Isn't that over now? Do we have any numbers?
I haven't seen any yet, but it is over.
Fascinating that it's just fascinating that politics trump morals.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what at least is saying.
Everybody's pig-headed about whatever position they've taken.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens with this. I mean, there was a couple of things out today on this, and we'll see probably by the end of the week. We know that they want to give everybody a Christmas package, and a lot of people are saying this is a great Christmas present for corporations, but a bit of a lump of coal for individuals.
Well, that would be what the Democrats say.
Right.
So the Republicans have a different story to tell.
Yeah, exactly. But if I did read some of this. There was some things out. We'll talk about that in a minute, about some of the things that were out by the Treasury. But we did see also some employment numbers that were good last week. 238,000 new hires were added. And we're still at a 4.1% unemployment rate, which is good.
Well, now that you mention it, since we're doing this show,
yeah,
I should take a look at you know what.
You know who, you know what? The shadow. The shadow stats moment.
Shadowstats.com and see what the, well, you know, it's actually showing signs of improvement. The unemployment rate appears to have dropped a point from 20, it looks like 23% to maybe 22%.
Hmm. Well, that's
true. It's definitely a downward trend.
Well, that's better.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's ever going to be a convergence where somehow miraculously, because of just time, there's going to be the same rate. It would be hard to imagine.
No, it's not even possible.
Yeah, I guess unless things shoot up and somehow they're not, I don't know, you know, if the I mean, there are statistical anomalies.
Well, it could happen if unemployment went to 100%.
Ah, good point. And then they can't get any higher.
Right.
But that's not going to happen with all the optimism that we're seeing. You saw that small companies in the U.S. advanced this month to the highest level, the optimism reading, the highest level in 34 years. 34 years.
What are they optimistic about?
Well, they became more upbeat about their future economic conditions, sales prospects. And this is according to the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business Surveys. And you know, it's interesting. That survey for the longest time was always, I found it really interesting that it was always behind. It was very weak, where there was very little optimism. And in the last year or so, maybe 2 years, it really started ramping higher. And I think the thought of tax breaks somehow for small businesses, particularly the pass-throughs, I think that really helped spark some excitement. I mean,
I guess so. Yeah,
I'd be happy.
Something did.
I'm going to be happy about that. I'm a pass-through entity.
Okay.
So instead of being taxed at my tax bracket for any shareholder distributions that we make from a subchapter S and some LLCs and things like that that we have, it's going to be some kind of partially deductible. Part of that will be deducted off, so there'll be some benefit.
Hmm.
Again, I don't know all the details. I'm not really digging into this until they're done.
Well, yeah, this hasn't been passed, so let's see.
Right. Now, some of the things we need to talk about and dig into tonight are the things that you probably know about, the things that everybody's been talking about. There's been one thing on their minds of all people on TV, all over the place. Even CNBC has a new Bitcoin ticker on the screen with the price.
If that doesn't tell you something's wrong, nothing will.
I was going to put the Bitcoin price change along with, you know how we have the weekly stock picks on the site. On the top, there's performance of crude, performance of the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ. I was going to put the Bitcoin in there, and I have an index to do so. The problem is the index hasn't been around for a full year yet. So the system's not giving me any information.
Right.
Anyway, here's the reports that I really think is fascinating. Reports now have been, there's been a couple of people out about this, that first of all, there's been a big uptick in cash out refinancings. So what you have is people that are going and refinancing their house. And with the refinancing, they're taking money out. So if their house is worth $100,000 or $150,000, and they have a mortgage of, let's say, $100,000, and they take out and refinance to $125,000, they're taking the cash out. So they're not just refinancing.
Well, people have been doing that in California forever.
Yeah. Now, this was really big back in the day when people were just using their house like an ATM.
Yeah, exactly.
But now there's all those reports that people are using their house values in order to buy Bitcoins and other assets.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
I don't know. So this is the quote from a gentleman from the North American Securities Administration Association. He says, we've seen mortgages being taken out to buy Bitcoin. People do credit cards, equity lines.
This is really a bad sign.
Yeah. Well, most of the
I mean, I'm sure that somebody can get in and out, and there's some people that can make money and they'll brag about it. But generally speaking, this is not really what the public should be doing.
No. Especially on credit cards at very high interest rates and
crazy.
Your house for a speculative investment.
It's unbelievable. You have one of the most stable investments you can ever have, which is real estate. And so you're leveraging the real estate to jump into something that's very speculative. Right. It's crazy.
So, I mean, most of these sites do take credit cards. It's a big way to put money in through credit cards or your debit directly from your bank account. But crazy. So we'll talk more about some of the Bitcoin coming up. Bloomberg, talking about markets, there was a great chart that Bloomberg had on this week, and it talks about the overbought conditions. A lot of institutional investors and many people use technical analysis. And there's a lot of different things. You could use things like the MACD, the moving average convergence divergence indicator. That's a big one. Because, you know, when you get across, like, okay, buy there because it's dipped down and it'll do that. There's moving averages, straight moving averages. A lot of times you use the 50-day, the 200-day, the 100-day. And there's a lot more. There's a lot. You know, there's Bollinger Bands. There's swing indices. There's all this. One of the ones that a lot of people use is called the RSI, the Relative Strength Index.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an oscillator, and it looks to where if you get to a peak of, let's say, plus 70 or plus 80, it's overbought. And if it's negative 80 or negative 70, it's kind of oversold. So Bloomberg puts out this chart, which we have over on DH Unplugged, and it looks at the S&P 500 RSI index, the 14-week relative strength index. I guess 14 weeks is, what are these 14 weeks? What's the significance of 14 weeks?
I have no idea. I've always thought the RSI was something of a scam. Mm.
Well, anyway, 14 weeks. What is 14 weeks? That's 3 months? Four, eight.
Well,
it's probably 3 months. It's probably 3 months.
Yeah, it looks like three months.
So it's a three-month RSI index, and it goes back, and you can look at this chart, and it shows how we're peaked out since the high of back in 1996, 7, and where the oversold and over. But it was the highest it's been since 1995.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. It's pretty interesting.
Now, with that, I told you this for the last few weeks. I've had several indicators flashing a warning sign that things are overdone, but that doesn't seem to bother markets.
No, it could go much higher.
It seems that way. Clearly, one of the things about this is that when it dips down into the low parts, you know, the negatives, or this one's not really showing a negative, but RSIs I've seen have been in the negatives as well. But, you know, depending on how you put the calculation together, when they dip down below these, like the green line, that's a good buying opportunity. That's a better play than looking at the high levels.
Yeah, it looks like it, you know, under all circumstances.
Right. Much better to buy on the dip.
But, of course, when you had that situation in 2000 where dropped below the green, and then it went up a little bit, then dropped below the green again, and then it went up, and then it dropped way below the green. You would have been wiped out with the whipsaws.
Exactly. But some people use this, and it is kind of just confirming many of the other indicators I've seen that are showing that there's a tremendous amount of froth in the market. Now, the Treasury, you know, Steve Mnuchin,
yeah, Mnuchin.
He put out the Treasury did. They put out a one page. Now I'm.
Yeah, one page analysis that everyone hated.
Did you see it? I read the whole thing. Well, it wasn't a big deal to read the whole thing. It was one page, but hey, I read the whole thing. They put out a one page summary on their findings related to the tax bill. You know what they expect. So, I read this whole thing. They estimated that there's going to be more growth than any of the other parties that put together, you know, the Congressional Budget Office and any of the nonpartisan.
It's a bonanza.
Yeah. They estimate there can be more growth. That's one of the problems with many of the other ones, they said. And that's a key component to the plan. They also said that one of the things that a lot of the other plans don't take or the analysis don't take in consideration is that a lot of the components of the plan that are due to expire aren't going to expire. They'll probably just be renewed. That's what happens historically.
So yes, that's true.
It's true, but there, you know, it all depends on what happens with, you know, how much it actually is working the plan. So they believe there'll be an additional tax receipts about, you know, the $1.2 trillion will cover the whole of the deficit. No detail on the backup. No calculations.
Well, you have to admire their optimism.
But I just find it amazing that they just are so cocky that they put out a one-page deal that contradicts everybody else without any data to prove their case.
Yeah. They might as well just made it a one-sentence memo.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. Trust us. It's going to be fine. But most other parties that have been looking at this plan and have been looking at the taxes, say that the growth rate's still not going to be that great. It'll be good for corporations to a degree, but the growth rate for the economy is not going to be that great. And they're hard pressed to really understand how the savings is going to, you know, they all say that we've had this before and it hasn't created growth.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, it's one side of the argument.
What do you believe?
Well, you know, one of the things that you have to kind of assume sometimes when they do some of these cuts is that, and you have to also assume this with QE1 especially, you'd have to do a double blind study, but is it possible that these tax breaks didn't really pay for themselves, but they saved the economy from collapse? Or the QE1 could have, what did it do? It bolstered the banks. It may have done other things. You don't know because there's no comparison. You can't have two economies at the same time. But it could have saved the economy from collapse. And so if you're an optimist, I think that's what you're going to always be thinking, whether it does, whether it pays for itself or not. What if you don't have it and the economy goes into the tank? You know, it's harder to get out of a hole like that than it is to kind of prevent it from happening.
Yeah. That's obviously... And most people err on the side of optimism unless things go really bad, until things get really bad. They err on the side of thinking things will be good in the future. So, yes, we all want this to work. I'm still of the mindset that I really don't understand when corporate profits are at an all-time high. Economy is just doing wonderfully. Unemployment is basically at full employment rate. And everything seems to be doing good around the world. Stock market's at an all-time high. What do we have to supercharge the economy for at this point? It's baffling.
Well, no, it's not baffling to me because I think we're in a depression, but people can think whatever they want. It's just an opinion.
I think there may be pockets of depression, but I mean, I'm not living in a depression unless that's the other thing. You know, what's a depression? So is it? You have to do a double blind study of that too, right? So is my depression the same as your depression?
Apparently not, especially if you live in California.
Yeah, I'm saying. So there are probably places that are not doing so well, and there's definitely people that are not doing well. But you know, you have to ask yourself, how much worse would it be? I mean, we could be living in Myanmar where you basically are wearing sandals, not showering very often, not eating things. That are clean, eating with your hands, with flies all around you. I've done this. And I don't know if they think they're in a depression, but they're just not in. I guess they're not in the best of times. Although that may be the best of times for them.
Well, there you go. Everything is relative.
Yeah. I wanted to discuss something that's going on. Then we'll get into a bit of a discussion about some of this Bitcoin stuff, which needs to be discussed. This is the market condition that we're living in. Let me set this up. Markets are doing their thing throughout the day. There's been a lot of buying interest that has been going on ahead of just the end of the year seasonality and taxes, and all the stuff that we know about that's going on. So today, you know, markets are doing fine and they drop, not a big deal, but they definitely take a drop down, not into the red, but from where they were. And why is that? Well, there was a tweet that came out from Rand Paul who said he wouldn't vote on anything that increases the deficit or creates new debt. So that was interesting. I saw the tweet. He put out a video with it on the tweet. And when you look at it, he really didn't fully explain what he was talking about. But the algos seemingly misunderstood it and said that he wasn't going to vote on it. Therefore, their calculations and the algorithms assume that it was talking about the tax bill. So they misunderstood that. They immediately started selling the tape reading algos. And it wasn't until a little while later that people realized that, wait a minute, he wasn't talking about that. He was talking about the government budget that's coming up for renewal.
Yeah.
And they just extended it by 2 weeks. Because God forbid they have time to plan this. You know, they have a whole year to come up with
it. Yeah, it's always at the last minute.
Yeah, they're so busy. But this is the kind of thing that's going on in markets where you see this is, you know, these algos are really, seriously, we talked about this last week too, they're really running things. And right now they're in the buy mode. Any dip is bought. So now what happens is when some of this is cleaned up, markets go right back up. You know, maybe they shorted into it. So they had to cover their positions, the algos, and they went right back up. So just be aware that a lot of the market volatility that we've been seeing, which is limited, but any of the intraday market activity on news items are not people just looking and watching Twitter and just running to their computers and clicking a button to buy or sell. It's these algos that are just running everything. And I think it's a terrible thing, by the way.
Yes, it sounds terrible to me too.
I don't, you know, nobody minds it when the algos are taking things up and keeping things stable, because we see that all the time. We see a lot of things dropping all over the place. Meanwhile, the markets are kind of holding stable. Why is that? Well, the algos are programmed really well to make sure that the largest stocks or the stocks that are moving the markets will stay up while they can take down the other areas of the market and it won't be seen. It will be kind of invisible.
Right.
So, all right. You want to talk about Bitcoin a little bit?
If you want to.
Yeah. So here's some updates. Over 500,000 new users had registered on the Coinbase site since Thanksgiving. 500,000.
Brother.
This is also interesting. This is really fascinating, some of the stuff. The largest, the Coinbase, which is the largest US-based, quote, cryptocurrency exchange, now has more users than Charles Schwab. More registered users.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is near an all-time high as it the futures started trading on Sunday evening. It's kind of light volume. It's about $3,800 contracts the first day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a one-to-one. There's another, that's with the CBOE. The CME that's coming out on the 18th is going to be a five-to-one. So that means that every one contract will control five Bitcoins.
Okay.
So that's a lot more expensive. So I'm not sure if there's going to be a push or a pull or any kind of reaction. I still think it's unbelievable. I think it's reckless that they put these futures out on an unregulated currency, whatever you want to call it, that has no intrinsic value.
You think?
I mean, it's just Wall Street trying to cash in, right?
That's the way I see it.
Yep. Volatility on Bitcoin has been rather muted since the futures have launched, comparatively. In fact, it's shifted over. On Coinbase, there are three coins you can trade. It's Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. Those are the only three that you can trade. A lot of people that buy Bitcoin or any of these on that site usually will do so through a ACH deposit that buys the Bitcoin or whatever currency immediately, and they have to hold it for 4 days. And then they could sell it after 4 days because it has to wait for the money to clear. And then when they take their money out, it takes about 4 or 5 days to get your money out. So that's kind of interesting because it will kind of, as a matter of fact, I have a friend who last weekend, I was talking to him, we were talking about the various currencies and what was going on. He wanted to buy Litecoin, but he wanted to wait for it to drop below 100. I said, it's 101. If it's going to move, maybe you want to take it. What are you going to, what's the difference for $2? He said, I like to buy it lower. You know, like he's getting a deal. Okay. He buys 50 coins last week. Okay. Actually, yeah, it was 4 days ago. So it's four business days. What are we talking about? Like a week ago, right?
Right.
He buys it at $99.
He got his deal.
Selling it today at $370.
Did he get out?
Yeah, he's trying to get out. But then he didn't have his account
set
up.
Trying to get out.
Yeah, well, because he didn't have his account set up right. He could only take out, he didn't realize it was going to go up like this. He could only sell $15,000 worth, and his position is now from $5,000 up to $20,000. And he can only sell $15,000.
Well, that's still okay.
So, yeah, it's a really good trade, obviously. But Litecoin was up, just skyrocketed. Now, Ethereum hit a new high over 600. I think it was going to 700 tonight. While Bitcoin was just hanging in. There's been some discussion why that is. Some of the sites, there's a couple of popular other sites, Bitfinex, that's possibly closing down. I saw a note that I went on there tonight to see what was going on. I have an account there. No money in it, but just an account. And they said, nope, we're closing down to U.S. citizens. So I think that people are trying to get their money out of there, and that's moved into other coins. And we're also seeing a crackdown starting by the SEC on ICOs, initial coin offerings. There's a recent deal by this company called Munchie, and the SEC squashed it because they said it was some kind of scheme that was has some security violations. Because I think these
aren't they all kind of schemes that have security violations?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, the raising money from the public and then allowing trading on it. It's kind of like what you've always said. What's with this ride sharing bullshit? It's not ride sharing. It's a taxi.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Yeah. You just lie about it.
Right. So you call it.
Call it something else.
Yeah. Call it something else. It'll work. We're doing the same exact thing, but just call it something else. So what I pulled was, first of all, we're seeing another milestone close to about 18. Well, it was 18,000. Where's it now? 17,570. And I got to tell you something though. Every time this dips, it comes right back. There is a lot of money going into this. In South Korea, it's trading $2,000 over the price of Bitcoin. There's that much activity and that much interest in it. $2,000 per coin over the price. There's some arbitrage. I've been working on trying to figure out how to do some arbitrage on this.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Let me just tell you what the deal is real quickly. If anybody's listening out there that has a real good understanding about Bitcoin, hit me. I want to talk to you about this and about arbitrage. You can actually have Bitcoin on a site like, let's not Coinbase, but let's say Bittrex. And I'm just going to give an example. It may be trading on Bittrex at, let's see, 16.2. Okay, right now it's trading on Bittrex. It's 16.2. It's trading on Coinbase. It's 17.5. So you would think it'd be easy, right? Just let's buy it on the low and move it over and then sell it on the other one. So far, so good, right? Same thing with Litecoin. Same thing with Ethereum. All of them. Okay. Major, major premium on Coinbase. Now, one of the problems is these other sites, you can't get money into them. So usually what you do is you buy Bitcoin on Coinbase or GDAX and you send it over through a hashtag process. You send it over, you know, transfer over to this other site. But if I do that, I lose money. I'm going to lose $1,200 per coin. So there's not many ways to get your USDs in there. I tried to do some wires. They want $100,000 minimum for a wire. So I'm going to give $100,000 to one of these sites that are questionable in the hopes that I'm going to buy some Bitcoin. And yeah, if I do Bitcoin, I'll do what? That's equivalent to six coins, 12. I'll make $8,000 on the, if I could buy it on one, shift it over and then sell it on the other.
Too risky.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think worst comes to worst, I'll make $3,000 or $4,000 if it comes down hard, but still it's kind of crazy that, there is this major premium and probably the reason is because you can get US dollars in there. You can't get US dollars in the other one. So that's why there's a premium here. You can move your money in and out. But anyway, last thing on this, or two things, is a Bitcoin price chart on there that I want to show you. It hit 18,000 today, intraday. And then it went to about 18,002. Still not eclipsing the close to 20,000 on that major spike last week. It's about 19,000 and change, I guess, 19,500. But here's some things that are interesting. Recent Bitcoin energy usage. I grabbed some information that I found, because Bitcoin, mining for Bitcoin takes a lot of energy. You're aware of that, right?
Well, yeah. Nowadays, when you were early on, you could have done it with very little energy.
So here's a chart of showing the energy usage that is from what, November or so. And it shows the significant increase on, it was a terawatts of power per year. It went from about 27 up to about 33. Okay, that's just something relative to how it's increased and how much energy is being used over the last month. Now, the next one is really interesting. The Bitcoin energy usage table, check that out. go through this with me.
Yeah, I'm looking. Bitcoin's current estimated annual electricity consumption.
We know, 32.6 terawatts, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, terawatt, lots.
The annualized estimated global mining cost, $1.6 billion.
So it's 10 to 1.
Yeah, 10 to 1 in terms of the revenues that's made from it. So that's not terrible, but the amount of electricity that's used is in terms of, if you can quantify the amount of energy and compare it to a country, it's the same energy that's used by Denmark.
Wow.
The whole country. The number of U.S. households that can be powered by the energy that's being used by Bitcoin is 3 million.
Hmm.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Yes, it's pretty astonishing, actually. So with the price being 18,000, if it went down to 1,800, it would be a break-even deal on the mining costs. And so if it went below 1,800, all mining would cease.
Yeah, at the current energy uses. And you would think that a lot of people would be, yeah, it would definitely be.
The energy usage is not going to change. Right. It's just going to go up.
I mean, there's only a certain amount of Bitcoins that are out there. So this whole mining idea is going to be, it has a fixed life.
Yeah.
The annual energy consumption as a percentage of the world's electricity consumption is 0.15% of the whole world's energy, electricity used.
Hmm. And the carbon footprint is high. So this is a very ecologically poor process.
Right.
It's not good.
Exactly. All right. I want to talk about Polaroid cameras with you. Remember these?
Yes, I have a couple.
Have you used them lately?
You can't get film.
And if you could get film, would you use it?
I have one camera that, yes, I would.
You would?
And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
It was a screwball camera made by Olympus that held a small Polaroid cartridge, but was a digital camera. So it would take a picture, a 2-megapixel picture, that's how old this thing was, 2-megapixel picture, and they would store it on a little drive, a little, you know, card. And if you wanted to print it out, you'd push the button, it would print out a Polaroid of the photo the digital photo. It was fantastic for a party.
Do you think that there's any use for the younger generation? Would you ever think that they're using Polaroid cameras?
I would say the hipster generation for sure. They would if they could.
They would if they could, because they want to look like they're old and all that stuff. You know, the old time.
I don't know if that's what they want to look like, but I do know that they're attracted to certain funky things like straight razors.
Aha.
Or razor blades.
Yeah.
The brush with the foam, you know, the razor brush with the, you get a big brush and you get some foam in a cup.
Right.
They're not foam, but that's soap.
Yeah.
And you swirl it around and you dab it on your face, you know, some as though you're living in 1880.
With a leather strap next to your sink, right?
They're all in on all that stuff. So the Polaroid would fit right in.
Well, my daughter called me tonight and she says, oh, I just got my new camera. I'm like, oh, what'd you get? And especially with, you know, she has a new iPhone 8. I'm thinking, what these kids, though, they use the Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook and all this stuff. And I'm like, what are you doing with a Polaroid camera? Is it real? First I said, is it just a digital camera? I thought to myself, you know, maybe it's just a Polaroid making some kind of digital camera that they like. No.
Which, by the way, they did.
Yeah. I thought they were out of business, by the way.
I did too, to be honest about it.
But anyway, so now somebody bought the name and they put out this Polaroid camera. I said, well, is it a Polaroid camera? Let me see. She goes, yeah. Look, I got the film. And, you know, remember that? You take the picture, that certain sound that you could hear in your head about when the picture came out of the camera. Remember that sound?
Oh, yeah.
And then you would take it by the edge, just hold it ever so slightly by the edge, and you'd wave it in the air. Remember that?
Well, that was the old yeah, black and white ones, yes. The color ones never needed that kind of attention.
So she said, yeah, it's like that. I'm like, what in the world are you doing with that? This is what they're doing. This is a thing. You ready for this? They're taking pictures with the Polaroid camera, like of themselves and their friends. Then they take a picture of it and post it on Instagram. I said, are you kidding me? Why don't you get some kind of like app that makes it look like a Polaroid? No.
Yeah, nope. That's not hard to do.
Nope. This is the thing. You take a Polaroid picture and then you take a picture of it and you post it on Instagram.
Yeah, it's idiotic. Now, this is, by the way, part of the Kodak has a similar adventure. They're bringing back the Super 8 movie camera.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder if the brownie box is going to come back.
Well, you can always buy one at a flea market. You don't really need to come back with it.
You know, my favorite camera was my Yashica twin lens reflex.
Yeah. I'm sure that was a good camera.
Love that.
The old twin lens reflex.
Yeah. You look down into it and you kind of.
Yeah.
I loved that camera. Had a big old negative. So you got big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd probably take a good photo.
Yeah. I thought it was great. Let's see. Moving along. from the crazy to the back to the markets here. Walt Disney seemingly is going to announce a deal this week to acquire 21st Century Fox. You know what's interesting about these acquisitions? It's like nothing's happening. Then some company out of nowhere comes in and there's a rumor or there's something that they're looking to, they're in the discussion with, they're in talks with some company, right? And then all of a sudden, all these other companies pile in. It's like, oh, no.
Where were they earlier?
What is up with that? What are you dealing with that?
Well, this is like the real estate booms. You know, these houses are for sale. They sit there and languish. And all of a sudden, the market gets hot. So now everybody wants to buy a house. It's the same thing, it seems to me. It's kind of these weird.
Penguins.
Yeah.
Everybody's just hopping on sheep, depending on how you look at it. So Comcast was looking to buy it. And they said they're no longer in the one running, at least according to this. So now it looks like Disney's going to pick up 21st Century Fox, which kind of is an interesting, I don't know what's going to go on with that. So I guess 21st Century Fox is looking to raise some money for, pushing this off.
Well, it's News Corp. It's Rupert Murdoch's operation. And 21st Century Fox is the part that they decided is too much trouble to maintain. And they're just going to concentrate on their TV network.
Right. There's an interesting piece out that goes through the inflows into mutual funds versus ETFs. We know that ETFs have been really hot with passive investing. Mutual funds, back in the 80s and 90s into 2000s were really hot. Then all of a sudden the realization was, hey, we could do the same thing through maybe a passive approach. A lot cheaper. Mutual funds back in the day were charging 1.5-2%. You get an ETF when they first started for maybe, 0.5-0.4%. These days, the ETFs are, some of these are charging like 0.03% a year, 0.05% a year, 0.1% a year. Whereas a mutual fund, many of them have dropped their fees, but they're still at, 1%, 0.5%. So, if you can get, so far, the idea has been instilled in everybody that passive investing is, the way to go. Active investing bad, passive investing good. And what's happened is that exchange-traded funds, ETFs, took in $425 billion so far through November, where mutual funds only saw about $91 billion in inflows.
Huh.
So there's $4.4 trillion now invested in global ETFs. Compared to 3.39.
How could that backfire and take the whole market down?
The only thing that I have been worried about is that with the use of passive ETFs, people are just saying, well, who cares about the underlying markets? We'll just buy into the market. Doesn't matter what individual stocks are doing. I'll just put money in there and they use it as a proxy for the markets. If we do see a run on markets for whatever reason, I don't know what the reason is. And ETF starts selling off. We've seen this in the flash crash. All of a sudden there's some bid and ask issues and some things get a little wonky. But besides that, underlying stocks may be pressured. And with all the share buybacks that we've seen with less liquidity in the markets, it could exacerbate a sell-off.
Ah.
Now, will it happen?
Yeah, the share buybacks are a problem.
I don't know.
Yeah, what would happen?
I guess what would happen is that it would create more problems with liquidity, and therefore selling big chunks of ETFs off will hurt the underlying stocks in the index, causing much greater liquidation requirements. So if you don't have any buyers for individual stocks as you've had before, and they're just selling indices just without any regard, just selling them off because they just want out. And the stocks that are in the indices are trading inside the ETF versus an active mutual fund that may or may not have that stock in there, that may or may not look to buy dips. An ETF doesn't do that. They're just whatever the money comes in, we buy the 500 stocks in the S&P 500. That's all that happens. If there's money going out, we sell it. And a mutual fund is a little bit more nimble. And they can, in a downstroke. So if there is this massive run, it could be a problem. And there's even more buybacks being announced. In fact, in the last 10 days, there was a major spike in share buyback and special dividend announcements.
Often, I thought that this was slowing down.
It was. And all of a sudden, maybe due to the tax bill, maybe because of end of year. I mean, Boeing announced an $18 billion buyback yesterday and an increase in their dividend.
Wow.
Yeah. So, all right. What do you think about Time's Person of the Year? The silence breakers.
Disgruntled women.
Yeah. Disgruntled women. They had them as the silence breakers, not the disgruntled women.
Well, they're disgruntled. And with good reason, but they're disgruntled. This has happened. This happens every so often. It never sustains. I talked about this with Adam on the show a couple of weeks ago. I've seen this happen before, and it just doesn't sustain for some reason. I don't know why. The women get bored, or they're not disgruntled anymore, or they get a few. Somebody throws a couple of offerings to the group as a whole, and everyone's happy. I don't know. It just doesn't. I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, keeping this in the public eye so Judge Moore doesn't get reelected in Alabama and people think Trump's a creep.
Yeah. Hey, by the way,
it's doing well.
Chat room, somebody give me a report on the election in Alabama. What's going on there? Let me tell you, remember I was very concerned about how this whole thing of sexual harassment and assault and all this other stuff was going to spill over. And it could create problems for people. Everybody's very sensitized about it and saying, we're just going to shoot first, ask questions later, right? Let me tell you a true story.
This okay.
Male manager takes out a new salesperson. So male manager takes out a new male salesperson, okay, for dinner as a congratulations for joining the company, okay? The manager's been working there for about 2 years or so. Somehow, something happened, and the male salesperson complained to the company owner that the manager made sexual advances or some other complaint similar to that. The next day, the manager was fired immediately, as the company owner said that it doesn't matter about the truth or anything like that. They don't want to deal with any, you know, issues with this. They just want it over with and not have to, you know, just done, off the books.
What state was this? And this wouldn't happen in California.
Florida.
Wrongful termination is just a real issue here. You're not going to get that to go. That's not going to work.
I'm just telling you what happened. We'll see how it goes. But I agree that there could be some kind of a backlash on this, but this is what's happening. We have an update. Roy Moore leads 7 percentage points over Doug Jones with a 64% of precincts fully reporting from the New York Times.
Has anyone called the election?
No, I don't think anybody's called. I don't have that anywhere, but no. We'll see.
Because that doesn't mean anything. That'd be that close unless they call the election. Unless somebody says, the computers have said that, boom, he wins. And they're almost always right. So rare that they're not. In fact, in the last few years, they've been 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And I mean, when it gets called for more, that'll be interesting. That'll cause quite a stir.
Yeah. Especially with the Democrats, but also I think people are going to scratch. Again, I keep on coming back to the thought that a lot of that's going on with the name calling and a lot of the really ugly style of what's happening in Washington in terms of a lot of the bullying, both sides, you know, a lot of this is just going to trickle down and people are going to think it's okay to do.
Oh, no, they're doing it now.
Yeah, it's bad.
This is the problem that Trump really has, and nobody wants to address it, which is that you learn this in college. It's one of the few things they teach in political science, if you want to take that class, which is that the president sets the moral tone of the nation, always. That's the number one thing they do. And so that's when blowjobs became like a plague amongst teenage girls is because of Bill Clinton, who popularized them by saying it's not real sex. And you could do studies of this and see that was the case. But Trump is creating a nation where people are just bullying each other and causing these problems. And it's very noticeable. My wife, who's in local politics in Port Angeles, she notices it all over the place. It's very much more obvious in places that are outside of California.
Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible.
All right, you know what? Do you know where we're at? Do you know where we're part of the show we're at? First of all, I'd like to mention that if you listen, you can listen to John C. Dvorak and Adam Curry each and every week on Thursdays and Sundays on the No Agenda Show, both live, and you can find it at your favorite podcast place, iTunes or whatever, pod blank, whatever you want to grab it. You can follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter at The Real Dvorak, myself, Andrew Horowitz, one word. It's time for Fed Limericks.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you're keeping this up. This should be a good one.
I don't know. Here we go. Fed Limericks. The world is running on fumes. Covered up are the risks that loom. The Fed tries to ensure that calm will endure, proving that we are all a bunch of buffoons.
I'll give you a B for that one.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
It didn't have quite the rhythm, I think, because you had that one kind of quasi rhyme in there.
Which, the loom and fumes?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. I'm trying. By the way, donation. Well,
you know what? Here, I'll give you a little anecdote.
Yeah.
We had this guy who was the editor, one of the editors at PC Computing. And editors are the ones who write headlines for people's articles. I mean, you can write your own. You write a headline, but they usually don't use it. They want to put their own on there. And then people should know that when they compare the headline with the article. Anyway, so this guy used to do these horrible puns. They weren't funny. They weren't good. Most of them got rejected, but he kept doing it for years. And then all of a sudden, after a number of years of writing these puns as headlines, something happened. Now, I think this is the way the brain works. And now they were so good, you begged him to write your headline. Seriously.
Well, maybe that will be something that happens. All of a sudden.
And that was John Zilber, by the way, for anyone who wants to track him down.
I'm going to try to keep these. By the way, listeners, if you want to send in a limerick, you can send it on over to us at dhemail@gmail.com. If you want to send that over, I'd love to see what you can come up with on a Fed limericks. dhemail
yeah, at gmail.com. Yeah, let's solicit some limericks. Yeah. Sure.
Uh-huh. That's it. Yeah, we'll put them up on the show and see. We'll take a look at them first, and then we'll put them up there. By the way, you can donate to the show. Hey, just to let you know that I checked something. The donations way back. Remember we got some Bitcoin way back?
Yeah.
So I won't give you the exact. I'll tell you the exact number, but it was nothing to be excited about. But I will tell you that I've held it the whole time.
Good.
We are up. Let's see, from, we're up, let me think about that, what that is. I don't know, like 900%?
Well, that sounds good.
Something like that? Or maybe, it's got to be more than that. From about 900%, 1,000, but maybe 1,000%.
Hmm.
Actually, it's 1,500% now that I think about it. That's what it is.
Keeps going up,
yeah,
just like the Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. But you can donate to the show. We really encourage you this time of year, especially when, you know, this is our Salvation Army pitch. You can donate for the Christmas if you feel compelled to. We'll go out and maybe buy a bottle of wine or whiskey or something for it. Go over to the site, click on the donate button. This is our donation bell, my only prop. You can donate to the show. We really appreciate it and hope you can do so.
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. We have the, and by the way, that does things like buys us the shirts for the DH Unplugged cups and the seat close to the pins and keeps the site running. So please, seriously, all kidding aside, please donate. We really could use a little bit of a stocking stuffer here. All the people that were the winners from the past year's Close to the Pin have registered, and they are
all of them.
Yep, all of them.
Good. And
they're all in with their price guesses. That and now it's closed and it's running. So you could check out the Close to the Pin Cup, where the people are, where the standings are, over on DH Unplugged. Just check that up. Just click on the Close to the Pin Cup. All right, here. Got a lot more going on here. New York City bomber inadvertently blew himself up.
Yeah.
So I guess it's going to be the training manual from ISIS. Let's see here. This is, you know, back to this whole issue of what we've been talking about is, you know, setting the stage for people and what's going on in the world and kind of, I think there's too much information sharing going on, by the way. I don't know what's wrong with people. They feel compelled to puke their information on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, wherever it is, right?
Yeah, they just like, yeah, self, yeah, I find it weird.
So the head of Germany's domestic intelligence agency warned on Sunday that China is allegedly using social networks to try to cultivate lawmakers and other officials. Hans-Georg Maaßen said his agency, known by its German acronym BFV, believes Chinese intelligence agents are posing as consultants, headhunters, or researchers, have targeted more than 10,000 Germans primarily via the social network LinkedIn.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think it's a great idea.
but the problem is that, you know, obviously we know this. The problem is that, you know, they are just, they're asking for this by posting all this information.
Yeah, no, I've always felt this way.
Yeah.
It's like volunteering all this information that really should be private.
Yeah.
It's none of your, it's the kind of, this is none of your business, but.
Yeah. Now this guy, Chamath Palihapitiya, who I guess he worked for Facebook and was involved with AOL. He had a great, he's involved with a social marketing company of some sorts. He had a great video out, and this is a quote. "I think we've created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. The short-term, dopamine-driven feedback loops we've created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. You are being programmed."
Yeah, no. I heard this guy on the CBS News today, and he's made a good point. I'm surprised this hasn't been made before. I mean, we've been bitching and moaning. But I think his perspective from his position is better than all the complaining we've been doing.
Yeah, and he said it in a much more refined manner.
Well, from a different perspective. I don't know if it was more refined or not.
Okay. Trump wants us to go back to the moon. He's seemingly signing
Bang Zoom
Space Policy Directive 1. Sounds like a weird like comedy movie. Space Policy Directive 1. You know, it's like...
Yeah, no, it sounds like a Mel Brooks.
We have to do Space Policy Directive 1. What is that? We have to go to the moon. That American astronauts were sending him back to the moon and eventually Mars.
Yeah.
He said he's based on his recommendations.
I'll also give him some. Yeah. Good. We need to go back to the moon because I think somebody left their watch.
Get that flag. Gotta get that flag flag. Let's see. Bitcoin just dropped 1,000 points, by the way, just as a point of reference.
$1,000.
$1,000. Thank God it's not volatile. Now, what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
This time I've written about Google's and other mapping programs that are on the phones,
specifically the
Google one.
Yeah.
And it leads to this following conclusion. It's actually a very entertaining article, bitching and moaning about one thing or another, about this navigation software, which is deteriorating, and it improves and it goes bad. But there's this thing that I noticed over the last couple of years. Google will, and there's a specific route in Oakland I know very well. I could stay on this road to another street. It's about 5 blocks past where Google tells me to turn. I'd get down to the other street and take a right, and I'd be at the same location. Google has been running people through, and I've noticed this, neighborhoods. What? Instead of keeping you on a thoroughfare where you just go down a little further and you make a right and you get to where you're going at a higher speed because it's a higher speed limit, they run you through neighborhoods where it's actually a little shorter, but not that much shorter. And you're putting people at risk by running all these cars through these calm neighborhoods. Somebody could get killed, some kid playing in the street, and there's car after car after car because I've seen it. I've gone to taking these routes, and I'm following somebody, and somebody's behind me. We're obviously all on the same map on Google. And I think it's a liability issue for the company. I think they're going to get themselves in some trouble because even though you're you signed off on the EULA to use the software to go into the neighborhood to take your little shortcut. The people that live in these areas, they didn't sign anything, and they're going to sue Google one of these days when they kill some poor kid.
Well, begs the question, why? Why are they doing this?
I think this whatever algo they've changed is now just going for, instead of going for quickest time, they're going for shortest route. And so they're driving you through neighborhoods to get to the street that you would have gotten to anyway. It's just,
isn't there a setting?
Crazy. I see it happens all the time.
But isn't there a setting that you could put, you know, say
no. There's no, you could say no toll roads, you could say no freeways, you could say no to this and that, but there's no, I've never seen a setting that says no none of these shortcuts through a residential area.
Well, that's trouble.
That's what I wrote about.
All right. All right, well, let's get to the stocks.
By the way, the kicker about that writing this, once you write something like this and it becomes public domain, that means the company's now been warned.
Oh.
Which puts the liability issue right at the top, on the top burner.
Oh.
Yeah. The guy told me about this trick a long time ago. He was marketing some product that accountants had to use. And he put together this program that was a definitive search engine for getting a certain information about accounting. And everyone had to buy it, because if you didn't buy it, you could be liable for being sued for malfeasance or something. And so, Google's now been warned in print. They should know about this now. And so if they don't do anything about it, it's really not good.
So from now on, we should probably, the next update to Google Maps should be the Dvorak update.
It should be.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dvorak route. Would you like to take the Google route or the Dvorak route? I would like to see that on the phone.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
It's not going to happen, but it's a good idea.
All right. Let's talk about the stocks. This is a game that we play. It's not an offer or recommendation to buy anything or do anything at all. Of course, it is very risky to invest in any stocks or any securities. We're not recommending that. If you do decide for whatever reason to play along and utilize any of these, well, make sure that you do your own research and talk to a professional financial advisor about this. We take no liability. I don't care who writes about it. We're not taking liability. Horowitz Company, John C. Dvorak, myself may own any of the securities we mentioned. We will note that in here. Now, one thing I want to mention before we start this, do you notice that bright yellow line on
double? Yeah, what is that?
I cannot find that stock or quote on it.
Was this my pick?
Yeah, you had Double Eagle Acquisition, EAGL, which I can find, but there's no pricing, there's no trading, there's no nothing.
That's weird. Okay, we'll leave it there for, I'll look into it, see what the hell the problem is.
Okay.
Now, there's another one that you didn't, I don't see it in, it should have been bounced, which is my Tesla short.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Yep, I'll have to find the price on that. That's out. Yeah, it started rocketing up this
week. Very disappointing. I don't know, this Tesla thing, it just really getting on my nerves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about all of the batteries and things and all the news about the Puerto Rico and Australia using their various batteries and all that, and them getting cash in from all those suckers that are waiting 2 years to buy the Roadster and their big announcements. And, you know, this is the same thing. The algos are just running it. Every time it gets down to a point that probably looks like the normal person and any indicator was short, they just ramp it right back up. The algos are in buy mode. Look at Roku. Roku's down 5%. It was up like 4 or 5%. 4%.
Yeah. And that's your short.
Yeah, just turned around in one day.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. You know, you have to hit it almost in a, you have to hit it quickly if they get the hell out. For example, there was a stock that we hit, overstock.com. Stock went to about 62, came down to about 57, bounced back up, came down, and then it flushed down to 42. Unfortunately,
yeah, shorting is very difficult.
Yeah. Very difficult, especially in an uptrending market. I mean, it's one thing if it's in a downtrending market, it makes it kind of like shooting ducks in a barrel.
Well, that was my only short, the Tesla. So you're the one still living on borrowed time.
All right. Anyway, we have CSX up 10.9, five below, up 35%. Penske up 1.5. Kara's is marginally up. Tesla's down. We'll kick it off. Roku down. GE just can't get. Can't get any. Every time you think it's the bottom, it just keeps going lower.
Yeah, yeah.
Stamps.com, well, a little bit
barnyard. Yeah, at least it's close to the bottom.
Yep. So I have two picks this week.
I might go down to 50. I got nothing. Go on.
All right. I got two picks this week. Edison International. Now, the fires, a lot of fires in California going on. And we've seen this before where a company gets blamed for the fire, right? One of the utility companies. And there's some investigation going. The stock is down from about $80 to about $68. There was some announcement tonight after the close that supposedly some kind of campfire started one of the fires out of the... It's like six areas that this fire's in, separate areas. But there's still investigation here. But if, you know, if we've seen this once, we've seen it 100 times, you know, these companies end up just coming out of it with no liability.
Right.
So I'm kind of going there. Riot
Blockchain. That's a good one. Riot, I like that pick.
Riot Blockchain. This is, unfortunately, I'm a day late on, not day late, but it's up 22% today. A lot of the cryptocurrency related stocks, Overstock.com, Square, Riot Blockchain, Social Reality. There's a couple other ones that I've mentioned before, really started riding up dramatically this week, you know, as we saw the various currencies going up. And, yeah. So Riot Blockchain, what I've known about Riot Blockchain, which somebody actually mentioned on TV late tonight, so I think is why after hours it fell down, is that this was a biotech company about 6 months ago or something like that. And they just abandoned all that and turned into...
This is the pivot of pivots.
Yeah, they turned into some kind of... They put the word blockchain and changed the name to something blockchain. They buy some cryptocurrency mining operation and they're doing a bunch of other acquisitions. And, you know, the stock goes crazy every once in a while. Way overdone. Up like 600% this year. So I was short.
Yeah, that looks like a dynamite short.
The problem is that I know it's going to be down like 15% tomorrow or at least 14% from what happened after hours. So it was up 22% today. It ended the after hours session only up about 6%. Mm. So it's going to start out on the down tomorrow. So, okay. What are you going to do? I'll put a 15% on this.
Okay.
Just to kind of have that there. Okay. I think that's going to be...
I think that's it. I got nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, we will talk next week then.
Okay. See you then.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.